a bit of mutual congratulations, a bit of a loving.
That's what it's all about.
More than anyone would.
Look, I told you, whereas Frankenstein's RPG pod is the Today program, right? This is the shipping forecast of podcasts. So that's the niche we occupy, and we like it here.
Oh, that's delightful. North at Sierra, south at Sierra.
I was going to say Jeremy Kyle for Frankenstein, but that's fine.
Hi, this is Steve, aka at AllUnthar on Twitter, and here are some more of my gaming vexes. Hello, on this episode, I'm joined by Rick at Lentillas, Doc at Dracowie, and as guest of honour, Matt Broom at Asako So, the tireless organiser and unrepentant samosa pusher behind the Owlbear and the Wizard Staff Gaming Convention. This one-day event, held in September in the Regency town of Leamington Spa, has rapidly become a fixture on the UK Grognard Gaming Convention calendar. It was doubly welcome this time round, as it was the first full face-to-face convention event that's happened since the pandemic got into full swing. As you'll hear, the opportunity to meet up with fellow gamers was greeted with a certain amount of hysterical elation by all concerned. Although gaming virtually has now become business as usual, and for some has offered more opportunities to play than ever before, the chance to play in person driven home the fact that face-to-face play is just a better experience, even for miserable old gits like me. If you haven't attended an Owlbear yet, I heartily recommend it. Come for the samosas, stay for the fantastic gaming opportunities. My own gaming diary is pretty healthy at the moment. I'm running Destroyer of Worlds for Free League's Alien, as well as a hack of Catalyst Games' MechWarrior Destiny, the latest RPG set in the popular Battletech universe. I'm hoping to do an episode on each of these in my playgroup when each series comes to an end. I've got specific thoughts on Alien in particular, especially when it comes to the viability of a non-cinematic series. As a player, I'm still engrossed by Old Scouts of Roleplaying's Night's Dark Terror. I know the other group Neil's running this campaign for are almost at the end, so it'll be interesting to compare notes once the dust has settled. Likewise, Martin Cookson's Fall of Delta Green game is reaching a climax now, as long-standing characters succumb to the terror of the unknown. This has been a standout gaming experience for me, which I hope we'll cover in a future episode. Not satisfied with this, Martin has also been expertly leading our RuneQuest group through a really creative Sun County campaign, complete with lovely hand-drawn maps. Last, but by no means least, Rick is running an Adventures in Middle-earth series set in the Second Age. Rick's knowledge of and enthusiasm for the lore of Middle-earth brings a whole new dimension to play, and it's a cracking story to boot. At the time of recording, we're only a couple of weeks away from Grogmeet 2021, a hybrid online and face-to-face event which, as of course you know, is organised and hosted by Dirt the Dice. The pandemic is going through yet another one of its plot twists at the moment, so although I'm hopeful it'll go ahead, I'm also prepared for things to go the other way too. If it does go ahead, I'm hoping I'll see some of you there. Come over and say hello and let me know what you think of the podcast. It'd be good to know that people are actually listening to this nonsense. So, with that, on with the show. So, we're joined by tabletop role-playing games answer to Dave Grohl, the nicest man in tabletop gaming, Matt Broom. Hi, Matt.
Thank you, Steve, for that introduction. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks very much for joining us. And so this evening, we're going to be talking about the Owlbear and the Wizard Staff, which is an absolutely fantastic event, which happened at the time of recording. It was about almost a month ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that.
Yeah, that's right, 18th of September.
It seems like an awful lot longer, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess so. I suppose it's been a bit of a blur since then with everything, back to normal life and everything. Yeah,
yeah, but, exactly.
Okay. I managed to get into a second mini convention since then as well, going to Grogloo in London. So it's been a busy few weeks.
See, I'm jealous now. I'm getting FOMO from that. I mean, I went to Expo where Dave and Tony and Neil and I, we sort of rented a house off site at the UK Expo. Yeah. So we sort of had a bit of face-to-face game, but it wasn't the full convention experience. And I think Albert was the first full face-to-face con we've had, I think, since lockdown started. Is that the same for all of us?
Yeah,
certainly so. For me. Yeah. I had a bit of tabletop face-to-face gaming with my sort of home group in August, but yes, the first event I'd been to.
So we're going to dig into a little bit about Albert. First of all, Matt, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, about your gaming history, how you became such a pillar of what Howard has called the Grogniverse?
So. I'm not quite sure, really. So I don't. So I think like a lot of people, I got into RPGs in secondary school when I was around 11, and somebody invited me to a game of D&D. I think it was the Red Box, probably in 85, 86.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, got fairly hooked and probably left D&D behind quite quickly. And I guess my early kind of pre-Deep Freeze gaming career was around things like Warhammer Fantasy, the FASA, Star Trek and Doctor Who games, and then later Ars Magica and those kind of things. And then I kind of let it sort of slide away when I was at university. I struggled to get involved in the RPG scene at the university, I think mainly because they asked for quite a high commitment level at the weekend, so I couldn't sustain. But I think like a lot of people, I've heard people sort of like lonely fun and this kind of thing, but so yeah. I would occasionally keep buying RPG books, even though I had no group or
Buying it is a key part of the hobby. I mean, I think that's, you know, I think we established that.
Yeah, so I keep buying the old. So I think, you know, despite me not playing for many years, I think I have a pretty much full edition, full set of everything from Ars Magica across every edition, bizarrely. Mm. Although I've only played a couple of the editions. So and then my wife and I and the family moved out of London at the end of 2006. And we kind of realized we were leaving kind of all our, you know, a lot of our friends behind. And we made a conscious effort to kind of join a society or group to sort of, you know, redevelop some sort of social relationships.
Okay.
And Lou, being much more altruistic than me, joined something called the Kenilworth Ladies Circle, which sounds as awful as you can imagine. When you're a charity.
I bet they have a great time.
Yeah, do-gooding for local people and put on the bonfire night every year and that kind of thing. And I joined a club called the Warwickshire Wargamers, which is, you know, as you can imagine, mainly kind of historical wargamey type stuff.
Yeah.
But within that group there were some RPGers, and one of the, you know, kind guys there invited me to a game of, you know, RuneQuest Classic, and that kind of just restarted me again.
So you didn't have the Deep Freeze things like a lot of the rest of us did?
Well, I stopped playing for, what would that have been? Yeah, for probably about 15 years it would have been.
Yeah. But you didn't leave me behind completely, because you say you were still buying stuff.
I kept buying and reading a little bit. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But stopped playing. And yeah, I guess people do, you know, what they can, like a bit of computer RPG type stuff and that kind of thing.
Okay.
But yes, then, as I say, early 2007, got back into playing with this RuneQuest game. And then the group of, as I say, predominantly wargamers I with, really wanted to play Shadowrun. So the first new, as it were, new game of my second RPG life was Shadowrun. I think, was it fourth edition? I ran and played, or fifth edition for them, and it was great. And then, you know, I think I got into Twitter for work, bizarrely, first of all. And then I thought, I was away at a conference and was a bit bored one evening. I thought, let's see if there's an RPG Twitter, and that's kind of
suddenly
I met lots of other people and you know, etc.
And the world opened up before your fingertips on that Twitter panel.
Yeah, I think it's only just me in the world, but actually that's not the case.
That's great stuff. And so Albert, I mean, how long has it been going for now? Is this his third, fourth year?
Third in person, but fourth in total. Yes, you're right.
Okay.
So we started in 2018.
Uh-huh.
And then obviously 2020, like with lots of people, we had a purely online virtual event. And then, as you say, yeah, 21 was again face-to-face with some online in parallel as well.
What made you want to do it?
I think it was me and Griff being on a train one night back from Grogmeet, if I'm honest. We had a few beers and dashed for the last train from Manchester to Leamington. And we just, you know, I just actually messaged Chris just before coming on, Steve, and he was saying the first Grogmeet was 2016.
Wow.
So it's probably that evening. So Griff and I were on the train, just thought that was a really, you know, really lovely day. We had a smashing time.
Mm.
And we hadn't actually thought of a kind of, you know, we were very pleased that people have travelled to Leamington, but we actually just thought we each knew, you know, a variety of maybe 20 RPGers across different groups we were part of. We thought, well, like, we could get the locals maybe to do, have a few tables together at a weekend. So that was our initial thought, and it kind of just grew a bit from there.
I mean, Samoa's always been a key part of the events.
Yeah, yeah, it has. You were there since its inception. I think I've told a few people this. It's just, I think they're like a legacy from when my children were little. We used to have, you know, I'm sure like everybody, you kind of buy Quavers and Watsits and cheese sandwiches and everything else for the kids. So I thought, what can I get the adults? So there's a very good, it used to be called Millennium Sweet Shop. It's now called Millennium Foods. They're obviously diversifying. Yeah, buying samosas from there. So I thought that'd be a good thing to get people coming to the Owlbear event.
It's almost totemic, I think, having the samosas. You've got to have it. It's part of the key element of the event.
Yeah, it's nice and straightforward for me. It's only like a few minutes walk from the venue, so it's all pretty good.
It's all very much appreciated. The first I went to was 2019, was it? I think it was, yeah. Rick, Doc, what about yourselves?
I think mine was the first one. I think it was actually, yeah, it was the first one. And yeah, samosas, I can only second that. They are amazing. So tasty.
So this is the samosas podcast, everybody. Yeah.
I'm sure Millennium Foods are very grateful for your customer anytime. So
okay, we get them as a sponsor. by Millennium Foods.
I mean, thank you very much for letting me in. I have been absolutely bursting as Matt has been talking about Ars Magica. I've just been unable to restrain myself. But I think, the first one I went to was the last one. I hadn't been up to it up till then because there was, you know, I mean this in a positive way, that there were lots of other cons of the olden days, and Leamington Spa is a long way away
from you, isn't it? Yeah.
So, but I mean, I was missing you guys so much.
We missed you, Doc.
Thanks for that. I was just desperately keen to get there. And honestly, it was excellent. And I will be back next year.
Yeah, definitely.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you all for coming. It was great to see you.
So the first con, was that just a one-dayer, or was it a morning, or was it just 20 people? Or how has it changed over the years, do you think?
It has certainly got bigger. I mean, I think prior to the pandemic or the run-up to 2020, I had been thinking about a kind of half day on the Sunday too, but I kind of haven't quite implemented that as yet because obviously the concerns this year about keeping it again a little bit smaller. So yeah, so it grew. So I think at its peak, I think in 2019, we had about 75 attendees in total. And I think, you were there, Steve. You very kindly ran, I think, some D&D for me. And so
I did, yeah. It was good fun. Yeah, it's great fun, in fact.
I mean, I
played King of Dungeons and ran D&D.
Oh yeah, of course, with Baz, excellent. Yeah, so we had, I think, 13 tables, and that was probably the capacity of the venue, actually. I remember it was a little bit tight where you were perhaps upstairs. So
it was hot, I remember that.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of at a limit of that kind of size, really. And this year, I mean, in some ways, it's kind of slightly self-selecting there. Obviously, you know, a certain number of people who are happy to travel and attend these events, and others who are less keen for good reasons. So it kind of became a kind of more manageable group at around the kind of mid-30s this year, which I think worked well. And we had, I think it was 10 tables in total running, but some of which had, you know, smaller numbers of players. Yeah. And that seemed to work pretty well, I think. And obviously, we tried to keep it as safe as we could for everybody.
Yeah. And obviously the online side of it as well. I mean, that's, I think 2020 was the first year you did it online as well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Okay. I think I've been part of, a virtual Grog Meet over the years and supported that. So I was aware, you know, that was a format. So I basically, stole that a bit from Chris and stuck that on for 2020. And then, as I say, I had this kind of parallel stream in 21. And that was pretty straightforward. I mean, there's a little bit of confusion. I think some people, you know, obviously signed up for an online game and an in-person game. And some of it was trying me making clear which kind of mode each game was in. But I think at the end, on the kind of final day, it all kind of worked out correctly, and everybody was in the right place, so it seemed to be good. And the GMs are always fantastic at communicating with their players. In some ways, the online stuff manages itself a lot more.
I suppose a couple of things. One, did you have people who wanted to come who couldn't in terms of face-to-face? And also, did you have a lot of people offering to GM rather than play? I got the sense that people were just desperate to GM in person.
Yeah, I mean, there's a variety. I mean, I think there were some people who wanted to GM, but you know, who hadn't been vaccinated when we began putting the calls out, so didn't feel they could commit. So certainly that cohort of people who are a little bit younger than our age.
the lower end of the Grog demographic.
You know, the under 25s. What? and then there were some, obviously, who had, you know, particular vulnerabilities who didn't feel it was wise to do it at that time. So I think it was a fairly good match, actually. I mean, in normal years, do you have a... I guess managing the GM enthusiasm is a bit of a challenge sometimes. And it's why I'm wondering whether to go a little bit bigger next year, but and looking at different venues.
Mm, yeah, we'll come back to that to the end, actually, because that's a question to answer, or at least to consider. So, as you said, obviously, we had 2020, the grim year, and we're still not out of the woods yet, but, you know, things are obviously better because we're able to game face-to-face. And this is just an open question for everybody, really. Coming into face-to-face gaming again, well, I mean, what's that been like, either sort of starting to game as small groups, perhaps home groups, but then also coming to a con and face-to-face? What were our feelings like around that?
It was obviously fantastic. I mean, I think it was, we've all been seeing, well, many of us have been seeing each other online on a fairly regular basis, you know, either gaming or the Mitchester Arms or just, you know, seeing each other. And so, you know, we sort of still vaguely knew what each other's looks like, but it's still massively different to be in a room talking to people. So I think that was, you know, getting into the pub, I mean, that was just lovely. On the Friday night. And the gaming, it was just easier. It was just simpler to game. You've got all five people. You can, you know, you're able, you know, to talk without everybody pausing politely or simultaneously jumping in at the same time. You can have bling on the table. You know, you can
the bling
maps
the bling.
And figures and stuff. You're not arguing there with BTT. People don't drop out. Oh, there were so many things, but...
Of course, part of it, you can say, yeah, it was, you had to sort of, it was a bit effort to get down there. I know, Doc, perhaps you made more of an effort than most from Dundee. But that was part of the attraction as well. Everyone had actually made an effort to come down there, and that did make it special. But, yeah, absolutely about the bling, the getting little cards out and doing that. And you've got things that have been gradually accumulating on bookshelves that you haven't actually used in anger yet. I've got this DM screen. I have to use it, etc.
Yeah, so I have a DM screen which will be used on every occasion, whether it's needed or not. So I just don't care.
I've seen you use it online, for God's sake.
I use it with the family. I just
yeah, roll for breakfast.
Exactly. What about you, Matt? What about your thoughts going to, obviously, as the organiser, you had a slightly different perspective on things.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed getting back to our face-to-face group in August. I think I mentioned on Twitter, one of our members, Dave, kind of sadly passed over the summer. So,
yeah,
so literally, I was about to email him, like, you know, we're going to do this, come over. And we heard that. So that was a poignant event. We kind of had we were playing Deadlands. We all had, you know, lots of bourbon together and a good drink as well as a game. So it was really nice to kind of reconnect and be together. So that was the kind of breaking the ice. And they were very relaxed about that, actually. I was worried how people would feel. And then, yeah, I suppose for me, I mean, I know Doc was very helpful to me as well in sort of talking through some of it. I just felt very responsible for people's, you know, health and well-being, really. I didn't want to cause any awful things to happen. So I guess my main feeling was just around, as I say, trying to minimise risk and try to keep it safe for everybody. So I guess that was my main feeling. And then, but once I was there, I think as Doc and Rick have said, you do feel very natural and back to doing it. And it kind of felt really lovely to be gaming properly again and hearing that kind of hubbub in the room.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for me, yes, the social events are just as fun as the gaming bits. So I think the pub and the curry and all that.
Oh, my word. I mean, Doc said about the pub, I mean, on the first night when, you know, a lot of us turned up, I practically exploded with glee. I mean, actually seeing people in three dimensions. Yeah. It was, as you say, Doc, it is so different. I mean, most of my gaming, even before the pandemic, was online anyway, just because of, you know, the job I have. And so actually, you know, face-to-face gaming was a rarity, but it was so brilliant to actually see people face-to-face, you know, friends, obviously, you know, a big group of friends there. But as you say, Rick, I think, you know, when you sort of when you're running a game or playing a game in person, it is a completely different feeling. And I think it is. So there's people talking online about how difficult it is to run some games in person.
I tend to, maybe I'm wrong, actually, given, you know, your experience with VTT. And I think, you know, there's a discussion I was part of a bit yesterday after listening to the Mud and Blood podcast review of Wrath and Glory. I think people picked up that saying, yeah, I could just about run it online, but not in person. I tend to think the opposite way. I tend to think I'll do lighter things online, so maybe not so tech savvy, and keep the more complex games with lots of moving parts to in-person games. And maybe I'm thinking of it back to front.
Not at all. I think there's a lot to that. Doc, Rick, any thoughts from you guys?
There are some games, you know, that are just going to sing much better if it's face-to-face. Mm. Troika with the initiative system where you pick it out of a bag.
Yeah.
That's horrible to do online. You want look on people's faces, Neil, I'm looking at you, when you completely fail to take an initiative token out of the bag and suddenly it's on the next round. I mean, that kind of thing just will not work online.
Yeah.
But I don't know what you mean about the more complex ones and the kind of automation you can get with them. That's a definite advantage, I think.
I don't think whether we want to go back to Earth Dawn. And,
I was just about to say exactly that. So let's go back to Earth Dawn.
Let's not.
But I mean, that was a shame, in fact, because you can absolutely see how Earth Dawn could have been actually made simpler. And I reckon, you know, in a year's time, Foundry will have Earth Dawn singing. I reckon
it's already there, Doc. The Foundry the official modules are out.
And I've
got them all, and they're all ready. And I've transferred all your characters over. So.
Oh, and we're playing right now. This podcast was a fake.
This is a surprise.
Segue into it.
So I think there are definitely some advantages. I mean, playing a lot online. I mean, we use Fantasy Grounds a lot, as you know. And on D&D, it is amazing how quickly you can get through, you know, relatively large rounds because it's just all automated. You know, everything gets, you know, you can bang through the combat, bang, 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 if you want to do it quickly. But still, trying to do things online, particularly when you've got a bunch of different players, particularly if they're not familiar with the system, it's just added complexity. And I think there's no doubt that, I mean, even without all the automation, you know, just the level of relaxation, I think, works out very well. And so I think for more complicated games, actually, I think I'm happier playing them face-to-face.
There's also something, I mean, I know we talk about body language a lot and cameras, how that sort of is a bit missing if you're doing online stuff. I realise what also you miss is the larger things, the actual movement, the acting out of things that are happening. Yeah. I mean, it's very relative to the scenario because we're playing Vaisen, but Blythe leaning forward and saying, "Have a pie," was one of the most sinister things I've seen in some time. But that wouldn't have anyway have worked for online. It wouldn't anyway had the same impact. Yeah,
his pie business went bankrupt as well, I think, Rick.
Oh, there's all kinds of. You don't want to know about the contents of his pie. You really don't. Oh,
thereby hangs a tale. No, oh, I agree, because I mean I'm one of these people that when I GM face-to-face, I GM standing up. I'm genuinely standing up. I know it's difficult with my being vertically challenged as I am, but but I prefer it. You get a much higher level of energy. I mean, strangely enough, I wear a Fitbit and it registers your calorie usage. And I think one of my highest ever weekends of calorie usage was grog meat.
Oh yeah.
Standing up and GMing for like 3 days in a row. I mean, it's a good job because of all the beer and curry. And as you say, Doc, there are some things that actually, you know, like Earth Dawn, the way that the dice pool works, there's a joy to actually rolling the dice as a group, which physically you get that, but online you just end up with a number and it's not quite the same. So I think it does take a different mindset too. And I think that's a switch that, you know, if we're doing more face-to-face game, which, you know, I certainly want to do that. You do have to think differently. You can't just transfer directly from a virtual approach to a face-to-face and vice versa. But blimey, that's deep, isn't it? Profound almost.
I think last year...
Take it out.
We had a panel discussion for the virtual Owl Bear, and we invited some colleagues from Modiphius and Pelgrane.
Okay.
And I think one of the things in my mind at that time was, are you investing more in electronic products because we're not playing on face to face? Because I mean, I think Rick said, you know, we have all these games we buy, and you think, well, actually, all I'm using is a PDF and a few screenshots at the moment, or as you say, some Roll20 modules. So you kind of begin questioning yourself even more for your physical purchases sometimes. So
I've gone beyond that, and I know Doc has. We've gone well beyond that way madness lies, I think. Yeah, I mean, Roll20, the usage has gone through the roof over, you know. And companies like Free League, I mean, they're just they're like including virtual setups as part of their Kickstarters. And so it's almost, in fact, I've got the virtual module for Twilight 2000 before I've actually got the physical copy. So, you know, it's there as a, it's almost as a, it's a, like, it's an expectation now. I think that's going to be there.
You know, wonderful things about the community we're part of and online gaming is you can usually find a group for some, you know, I was going to use Earth Dawn as an example, Steve. Maybe I shouldn't, but some, you know, relatively niche niche game. You can find somebody to play.
No,
it,
I think it's fair to say it's niche. That's not.
You and Gaz, isn't there? I think so. There's a couple of.
Oh, I don't know. I think I've got a few converts out of the two groups I ran through. Excellent. Earth Dawn. I did drive other people completely as far up. Other people like Kay possibly would run a mile rather than play Earth Dawn ever again. But there you go. What about the game? So what did we play? What did we run?
Very happy to jump in. Well, as you know, I ran Gamma World 7E, which is basically D&D 4E post-apocalyptic gonzo nonsense. I thought that was going to be loud and dramatic and covered with bling and ridiculous. And I thought that was an excellent sort of opener for a con game with low expectations where everyone was overexcited. And I think that was exactly what it was. I think Dirk and Ian Cooper and Chris and Ed, they were all so glad to be there that their critical faculties were surprisingly low.
I think you're underselling yourself there, Doc.
Well, possibly, and other people would say overselling, particularly the players. So on average, I'm probably right. But, I mean, and then I got to play, Paul Fricker was running his Full Fathom 5.
All right.
How often can you say, you know, you're getting to play a game run by a legendary Cthulhu author?
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool.
It was absolutely great. Had a fantastic, I mean, the gaming, yeah, gaming was absolutely brilliant, and you could see everyone else was just so excited at the same time.
What about you, Rick? What did you get to play and run?
I actually just played this time. Nice. So I played Vaisen. So that was really good. So yeah, Blythe was running that. And and he freely admitted that he just brought the PDF along. Because the book is so beautiful, he wasn't going to let it out of the house.
It is a beautiful book. Yeah,
and I'd made exactly the same calculation. I wasn't going to let that one out. So I played that in the morning. That was fab. And in the afternoon, played a bit of DCC, which was very DCC. Is possibly the best way I could describe it. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun as well.
Yeah,
great.
I haven't played either of those. I mean, I've got Vaisen, but I've heard a lot of good things about Vaisen in terms of the way it plays and the atmosphere it evokes.
Oh, it is really good because it's not Cthulhu. It's not that kind of thing. It's not grim horror. It's kind of melancholy folk stuff. I think folkish horror. I think it's the best way to do it. And the clever thing that they've done, of course, I mean, they put it in Sweden, turn of the century, so turn of the 19th to 20th century. Yeah. So it means that it's kind of, it's recognisable, but also it's still different enough, it's removed enough, so these things do actually seem, it's quite possible that they could exist. So they've done that really well. But, I mean, it plays so well. It's pretty simple. It's the usual free league system. But it works really well in terms of atmosphere, in terms of what's actually going on. Yeah, worked wonderful.
And I hear they're bringing out, or is it kickstarting or bringing out a UK source book for that, apparently?
Yeah,
so I've heard. Right. Or did I dream it? No, I have heard that. That's good.
Like an English folklore one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that'll be amazing. Yeah, good stuff. What about you, Matt? Go on.
Yeah, so the morning I was kind of more just, inspired and in awe of Doc's GMing, obviously, in the first room of the venue.
You were fully exposed to it without the appropriate shielding, weren't you?
Yeah, there's no PPE for that one. No. I was just sort of making sure everybody was in, and we, you know, managing latecomers and changes of schedule and that kind of thing, and obviously doing the samosa run. And in the afternoon, I had a wonderful game of Shadows of Estrin with Chris and Howard. So that was really good.
Yeah, really fantastic. Lovely. Again, another game that I haven't got it, but I look at the book and think, oh, that's on the list at some point.
Yeah, that was amazing. Chris was a superb GM, and I really enjoyed that. And again, it's one of those things I have bought and looks at me on my shelves, and I always think, oh dear. I mean, I just play it at cons. I think I've had a few games at Expo over the years, and this one at Owlbear. So it's been
brilliant. And actually, it occurs to me, I've never played in a game that you've GM'd, Doc. So I am going to make it my mission. I don't think I have. No, I haven't. I'm going to make it my mission.
You have, no.
No, I'm going to make it my mission to get into one of your games at some point.
Well, I mean, can I say I'm looking forward to disappointing you?
There's many levels, I think, Doc, aren't there, apparently?
Well, I mean, that was the official Dirk the Dice feedback, that the game worked. As he sort of stroked his chin, and, you know, you could see, you know, years of game critiquing. Well, I think that worked on three levels. There you go.
That's it. That's good. Like, at least it worked on at least one level. I mean, that's a bonus. I mean, three levels. That's sort of, you know, Herculean, I think, isn't it? Yeah. So I played Zweihänder in the morning.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was great, actually. So I was really interested to see how it played, having Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay online and then carried on doing the same thing face to face. And then I was curious to see how Zweihänder looked. It was really good, actually. It was, and Paul, it was Paul Baldwin who ran, I think it was Knights of Blood, so the classic White Dwarf scenario. And he ran it. It was brilliant. It was great fun. Had a great time. I can't remember all the players. Adrian Kelly was one of them, who very kindly gave me Traveller slipcase. And we'll say, I came away from that weekend with practically a hernia. Bought a load of stuff from him. I got that suitcase. I bought a load of Rollmaster stuff off Sam. And then obviously I picked up some stuff from you as well, Matt. So,
yeah.
I'd wisely not driven down. So I was trying to get all this stuff back on the train. I could hardly lift my case. It was so much stuff. It was ridiculous. Anyway, so Zweihänder in the morning, which was great. And then in the afternoon, I ran D-Sanction. I liked it. It was a really enjoyable game. I mean, I sort of pushed the boat out with little bits of bling, so little cut-out characters and maps and this, that, and the other. But it was. I really enjoyed it. It was great fun. Yeah.
We do need the next event as a kind of. I had the pleasure of being in Doc's the Queen's Men game, I think, last year. I think we need a de-sanctioned Queen's Men game off at some point.
Okay. All right. That sounds good.
Wow.
Okay. What we'll do is we'll play in each other's games, Doc, and then we'll critique each other's games. How's that?
Who's got the highest levels?
I look forward to doing that, particularly if you do it online. So, you get to edit it. So maybe that will.
that's the perfect way to do it, I think. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we're getting a sense of overall reflections on the event. It occupies that point in the year. So you sort of have the summer where we have Expo in the middle. Which is, you know, we do a bit of gaming and we sort of get together a bit, and then there's a bit of a break, and then we have the September, which is with Albert, and then of course we've got Grog Meet, you know, in November. So it's almost like it's part of a gaming fixture for the year now. So hopefully it's going to continue, because I really, really enjoyed it. So for the future of the event, I mean, you said obviously you were thinking about doing things slightly differently than the pandemic hit. So again, you know, we're not going to hold you to this, but what are your thoughts about, you know, what Fairs and Wizard Style will look like?
Yes, I think the timing is, as you said, is probably a good one. I mean, it's kind of in my head, it was kind of, let's get August out of the way and kids back to school and then think about it. The one event that kind of happens in mid-September, which has lost us people over the years, is some people drop kids off to university around that weekend. So I think poor Neil missed one year, and I think Lee Nielsen, who's a local gamer, couldn't come this year. But I guess you're never going to find a perfect weekend. So I think that kind of mid-September slot is pretty good. And as you say, we've got a bit of a gap then to Grog Meet in November, and then Dragon Meet in December for those who want to go to that. So yeah, so the thing for me is whether to think about a different venue. I mean, it is a little bit basic where we go at the moment, and I'd go and explore kind of the Irish Club in Leamington as an alternate venue, perhaps for next year, which has I guess a bit more professional on one level, in the sense it's cleaned and all that thoroughly before we use it, and got quite a lot of space,
more than one toilet.
Exactly.
Well,
I know it's you people today. Yeah. So it's got those, and it's got a bar that opens at lunchtime.
Oh dear.
The downside is it is a club, so there's an area of it we couldn't book, and the club members have to be able to come in. So there's a bit of a swings and roundabout
thing. Yeah.
But I think overall it might be a good idea. There's more parking and that kind of thing. So I'm tempted to do that, and I think we could. you know, we could manage to get a couple more tables in, and there's a nice kind of, you can sit out on the river. So if it's a sunny day, it could be pleasant out there.
So you were thinking maybe about expanding it the Sunday morning, or?
Yes, that was one thought we had, was I guess, as I say, when we were planning for the September 21 before the pandemic hit, talking to, you know, Matt and some of my friends locally about some kind of open gaming session on Sunday morning. So some sort of pick up and play, either board games or some short RPGs or indie stuff on the Sunday morning. So maybe less kind of things to book into. So we could either just come along and chill out and chat or do a bit of that. So that was our thought for 2020. But yeah, we could have just another table put on Sunday morning to lunchtime.
Okay, so it sounds as though the owlbear is going from strength to strength. It's hopefully what the rest of us and gaming generally has emerging from the horribleness of the last 18 months or so. And the rest of you guys, any other points you want to bring up? Anything yourself, Matt, obviously, anything else you want to say at that point?
I was a bit, it sounds a really stupid thing to say, I was a bit surprised how popular D&D was when I first began organising conventions.
Strangely.
I think this is because obviously we all tend to play different games perhaps, but so I think I might have to go back to that. And I know you kindly helped with that, Steve, so make sure we have a couple of tables of D&D. And again, I think to corrupt people, that's quite good, because, you know, I quite often have people sign up saying, I'll play D&D and they'll swap something else in the afternoon. So
it's
quite a good way to get attendees in. And the nice thing about Leamington, it's got a lot of computer games. So a lot of people I game with work in the computer game industry.
Mm-hmm.
So Griff and Matt and others. So a lot of people who play the kind of games we enjoy to also improve their skills at creating computer games. So we're lucky to have quite a lot of gamers locally, which is
quite helpful as well.
Yeah.
So you need someone to throw themselves on the 5e sword then, do you? So I'd like to formally propose Neil Benson for that. I think he'd be...
He'd love it.
I'd be very happy to do that. If you need that, man, I am there for you.
Thank you.
With figures and dice and
the whole thing.
And the whole thing. A Matt Mercer wig.
That's a photo opportunity right there, isn't it, really?
We should have a think about a prize next year for a kind of 4E Owlbear and Wizard Staff themed adventure. So you might go for that, I think, as well next year.
Wow, okay.
The 4E love from Graham and Phil and others.
Yeah, Graham Speary and others. Yeah, absolutely. Well, having picked up that Darks and stuff, I've been looking at, because I've never played 4E. And I'm looking at it thinking, and then they're listening back to a certain other podcast that should be nameless, where Doc talks an awful lot about 4E. And they're thinking, perhaps this is something I should jump on. That's good. All right. Okay. So thanks very much, guys. Thanks very much, Matt, for coming on to talk about Owlbear. So it's a brilliant event and thoroughly appreciated.
Thank you all for your support and kindness. Thank you.
That's brilliant. You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening to another exploration of my gaming vexes. If you've got any thoughts you'd like to add to what you've heard here, or a gaming vex of your own you'd like to offer up for discussion, you can contact me on Twitter at AllAnthar, or you can leave a voice message. The link's on the podcast webpage on Anchor, or can be found in the show notes. Until the next time, may all your games be free of vexatiousness, and be excellent to each other, always.